The views of this program do not reflect the views of KJLL Radio, its management, or its sponsors. The show host is solely responsible for its content.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure...
Direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
The Fred and Jeff Show.
And good afternoon, everybody. This is the Fred and Jeff Show.
Isn't it sad that the station doesn't agree with our views about how great Tucson is?
This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my brother, Jeff.
How you doing, everybody?
And welcome to the big show. This is just another beautiful Chamber of Commerce Day in this city.
Absolutely.
And we have a very exciting show for you today.
Yeah, we do. And on the show today, we have a guest. And a lot of our listeners might be surprised because usually we roll two or three people in, but our guest today is probably one of our favorite people in Southern Arizona.
Oh yeah,
probably more favorite than good old Big Jim Griffiths. and I say that just because Big Jim's a great friend of the show, but we have a great friend here today, family friend actually. Dr. Bernard Fontana, and we're going to get to Dr. Fontana in a minute, but first some house cleaning.
Yeah, we need to thank our sponsors.
Yeah, we want to say thank you to all of our sponsors, our friends at Barker Morrissey Contracting, Casa de la Luz Hospice, H&S Estate Gardening, the Coleman Brothers at Mayfield's Florist, the folks at Monkey Burger, Power Women Investing, and your friends at Ronstadt Insurance.
And they are your friends.
They are your friends. So please support our sponsors because they are the ones that... make sure that we're here every week telling you what's great about Tucson. And any other house cleaning, Fred?
Not that I'm aware of.
That's good. So let's get on with the show.
Yeah, we actually cleared the decks for this one. And this is actually a little bit of a coup for us because when we first started the show, we talked to Dr. Fontana and tried to coax him to come on. And he's like, no.
No way. Not interested. And here you are.
Here I am.
Here you are. So,
I'm in trouble with my neighbor, Jim Griffith.
No, not in trouble with Big Jim at all. So, one of the things that we want to talk to, or we want to ask you first, is we want to introduce you to our listeners. I'm sure there are lots of folks out there that have no idea of the scope of work that you've done here in Southern Arizona. So, Dr. Fontana, tell us what you did as a younger man.
Not that you're
an old man, but you know, tell us what you did before.
How young is young?
Well, what have you been doing the last 40 years here in Southern Arizona?
Trying to make enough money to leave town.
No, sir. So you worked at the U of A?
Right. Well, I actually came out here in 1955 to go to graduate school at the university and got my degree, a PhD, in 1960. Worked for 2 years at the university library and then worked until 1978 as ethnologist in the State Museum and simultaneously taught in the anthropology department. And then in...
Now, we're gonna sort of interrupt you while we're going here. What's an ethnologist?
An ethnologist is somebody who's interested in the comparative study of cultures. And my primary focus were Indians of the Southwest, which included northwestern Mexico. Then after leaving the museum in 78, I went back over to the library. I had a wonderful job there. It was called a field representative. And it never had a job description, which meant I could do pretty much as I pleased. So that's what I did until I retired until 1992.
Wow, that's great. That's a great job description.
It was wonderful. I had an absolutely great time and managed to do a lot of research and a lot of writing and responding to, I was kind of the university's point man on the Southwest for many years, so that people contacting the university wanted to know something about regional history, regional culture, that kind of thing, I'd get the calls.
So what was a typical call?
Oh, I don't know anything about typical, but people would call up and want to know something about, what did I know about the shootout at the OK Corral?
Got it. So a lot of I don't know if that's kind of a stereotypical of the Southwest, but that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, people who are interested in either regional history or Indians. And that's why over the years, you know, I've been labeled a historian. I've been called an anthropologist. I've been called lots of things we can't repeat on the air.
Probably all by Big Jim, I imagine.
Right. You know, any minute he's
by the way,
I think
Jim is listening, I'm sure, right now. Because we were at breakfast this morning, and I mentioned I was going to be here, so that if he remembers, he's probably listening. So
we'll get a call later.
So he's taking a nap. He's taking a nap right,
right
now.
Right, right, right. So a long, illustrious career at the University of Arizona.
Right.
And you learned a couple things along the way about the Southwest.
I did indeed.
And one of the things, and I'd mentioned this to you earlier. There, I found a picture of you online from 1974 when you were working at the U of A.
At the State Museum then.
At the State Museum. And there's a picture of you and a gentleman, Tohono O'odham, I believe.
That's right.
And you have a calendar stick.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
What is a calendar stick?
Well, beginning sometime in the very early part of the 19th century, and we have no idea where the idea came from. Proceeded to use saguaro ribs. They take a saguaro rib and cut it and kind of smooth it out a little bit, polish it. And in several of the villages, certainly not every village, there would be a so-called keeper of the stick. And he would be like the village historian. And what he would do is that every year he would decide, or whether it was consensus in the group or what the most important event of that year would be. And he would put marks on the stick that were not really writing, but simply marks that to the keeper of the stick could remember, they would remind him of what it was that was important that year. And then by rote memory, and then associating it with whatever marks he would make on the stick, he could recite the history. And then they would put a perpendicular line on the stick so that each one of those lines represents a year. And they're really interesting because they're not the kinds of events that you and I would think are terribly important. For example, when the first reservation was set aside in 1874 at San Javier, and that was the first, you know, then Papago Indian reservation, there isn't a stick that makes any mention of that at all.
Really?
And so what they put on there were things that seemed internally important to them. The Apaches came and raided such and so. There was an unusual snowfall and the snow stayed on the ground for 3 days. Or there was a mine on the reservation and the mine closed and it put a lot of people out of work. So that what you get from these calendar stick accounts are an odd perspective on the what is important in the past. And it turns out that what's important to them is not by any means necessarily what you and I might think should be important to them.
Well, yeah, I mean, we weren't there living amongst them.
That's right.
So
are there standard markings or were they unique?
No. Each was unique to the keeper of the stick. Eventually, when the keeper of the stick got elderly or was, you know, not in good health, then he would choose somebody else and sit down with them and get them to memorize again.
Wow!
And so that you know, if you had an event like, let's say there was an earthquake, that would obviously make its way onto the stick. 1887, there was an earthquake, and that made its way onto the sticks. And maybe you've marked that with three dots and a triangle or something like that. Then you would tell your successor, get him to memorize that's what that indicates. And then he looks at the three dots and the triangle, says, "Oh yeah, that's the earthquake year."
So, do you see in your work? Do you see those histories that for 100 years, one person remembering the history of a family, of a group of people, is that still continue to today?
You know, I honestly don't know. I wouldn't be surprised at what there isn't somebody. You know, there's been a kind of revitalization in recent years. And over the years, various people have sat down with O'odham and actually recorded them and said, okay, what's this year? And so they've gotten them to repeat it in English. Mm-hmm. So that there are about anywhere from maybe 7 to 12 publications where these accounts have appeared in print. And in more recent times, Adam are aware of the fact that there are these published accounts. And I really don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me to find out that there's in this kind of cultural revitalization that's been taking place in the last few years, that someone hasn't picked the tradition up. But I honestly don't know.
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of pressure to remember your people's history over decades and decades.
Well, except that the there are only at the most 2 or 3 events for each year. And anybody who could memorize a Shakespeare play wouldn't have any problem memorizing
That's a great point. That's a great point.
So, just a long story. Now, has anybody gone and compared one stick to another so you sort of get a sense of like major events that affected everybody on the stick and you sort of get a timeline off of that?
I don't know that anyone specifically studied it, but it would certainly be an easy thing to do. But for sure that these are regional. In other words, there was a stick at San Javier that was published in the 1940s or so. An anthropologist named Ruth Underhill published this account in English. And when you look at that and, say, compare it to another published stick for covered wells on the big reservation, the events are quite different. So that they're regional. I mean, things that were important to whatever group that the keeper of the stick was involved with. But what's really interesting, again, is this perspective. You know, I've been keeping a newspaper clipping file on Adam and San Javier since 1955. And folks out on the reservation found out about it when I was still at the university. And they came in one day and wanted to know if they could look through it and photocopy these newspaper clippings for their own library. And I said, of course. So they... Two women came in, and they spent about 2 weeks in my office every day in the library going through these things. And they were laughing, and they were just having the best time looking at all these old clippings. And they were taking those, making a selection, and taking them down to the photocopy room and having copies made and stacking them up. And one day I got curious. You know, they weren't around, and I thought, I wonder, you know, what are they selecting? What's the basis of their selection? So I took a look at them, and it turns out that their selection and the selection you and I would make were altogether different.
Really?
And the ones they were interested in were the ones that named people, that were personal. You know, somebody that whom they knew or they knew the family. And, of course, there are a lot of, you know, whether somebody died or they got in a car wreck or they won a prize or whatever it may be. Those were the kinds, you know, history was personal. It wasn't this broad general sweep of things about Asarco getting a mining lease at San Javier. You know, they could care less about that kind of thing.
But the politics of the nation, nothing.
Well, politics, yes, but mostly things having to do with, you know, again, with individuals and there, you know, I guess there were some, to them at least, some pretty funny stories in there.
That's fantastic. Culturally, that's fantastic because, you know, I don't know if you know much about the budding, I don't know what you call it, but there's an industry that's growing. It's called positive psychology. Mm-hmm. And positive psychologists will tell you that people who understand that family and friends mm-hmm. are what are important, those are the people that live the happy, fulfilled lives. And it sounds to me like the Odom got that right, and they still have that right.
Yeah, that's true. Of course, you know, history is an interesting thing, as we know it. I had shared an office with a priest who has since died, Kieran McCarty, whom you knew, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Was a historian. He had a PhD in history from Catholic University. And we contemplated putting a sign over our door that said, "History has nothing to do with the past."
How true. How true.
And it's because when you think about it, the past is literally everything that happened before right now, before this instant. The fact that you may have had a hiccup 3 seconds ago, that belongs to the past. But we wouldn't call that history. And so that what history is a selection out of all of the things that occurred in the past that we tell or we present, whether we write it or do it orally. And it turns out that what history it really is this selection that we make of past events that tend to be an argument either about the present or the way we think the future should be. So it's a battleground, really, for people. And, you know, history is always being revised.
Well, and it's
the past hasn't changed,
right?
But history is continually revised.
And isn't what's that old saying that the winner gets to write the history? The winner of the war writes the history.
Sure, absolutely.
So, yeah. All right, we're going to take a super fast break, probably about a minute and a half, and we'll be back to talk more to Dr. Bernard Fontana. So stick around.
Barker Morrissey Contracting, our goal is to develop lasting relationships with each one of our clients. We measure our success on achieving that in the end. We offer the best possible combination of experience, integrity, and commitment available in Arizona. The foundation of our organization is a commitment to meet our clients' needs from pre-construction services through project build and move-in. We have experienced, cohesive project managers who thoroughly analyze each project prior to construction. We do this to provide value engineering at the front end of the project while reducing time-consuming change orders during construction. We are confident that our collaboration with you will result in a successful project that will exceed your expectations. Barker Morrissey Contracting. Straightforward, honest, and reliable. Call us at 323-3831 to set up an appointment. That's 323-3831.
Casa de la Luz is Spanish for House of Light. That's what one needs when facing a terminal illness. A House of Light to provide comfort, support, and experienced hospice care during the end-of-life journey. The mission of Casa de la Luz is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Founded in 1998 by Lynette Jaramillo and Agnes Poor, Casa de la Luz Hospice has become a leading provider of superior hospice care throughout southern Arizona. Whether it is in the hospital, at home, an assisted center, or a nursing home, the caring staff at Casa de la Luz will reach far beyond the usual and customary hospice service. Every service provided is a reflection of our commitment to our community. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Visit the Fred and Jeff Show online at fredandjeff.com.
And welcome back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstedt. I'm here with my brother Jeff, and we're joined in studio by Dr. Bernard Fontana. Dr. Fontana, we have always appreciated having you around. I remember when I was on the city council, we had some issues about history, and you were always accessible to me and gave me some sage counsel on a couple of issues, and just really appreciate you being here today. One of the things that we think is really important, though, is the program to save San Javier, mm-hmm. and we wanted you to talk a little bit about that.
Well, in 1978, a group of people in the community realized that the mission was having problems in terms of upkeep, and there were a lot of signs of wear and tear and aging and so on that weren't being addressed. So, thanks to the late Jim Murphy, who at the time was the diocesan attorney, and Father Kieran McCarty, it was decided that we needed to have some kind of entity that was independent of the Franciscans and independent of the church hierarchy generally, whose sole purpose in life would be to take care of that building, which is, you know, Tucson's icon, Tucson's Southern Arizona's
absolutely
great treasure.
Absolutely.
So they incorporated the not-for-profit, non-sectarian Patronato San Javier. There were, I guess, eight of us incorporators, of whom Dion Bretthart and I are the survivors. Everybody else is gone to the great beyond. And And so for many years, we didn't, you know, there was nothing really dramatic happening. We were busy trying to raise money, and the money is, you know, it's set up. It's totally independent of the church and so on. And then in 1983 or so, it was the year that we had that those blazing hot summer days. We suddenly discovered that some of the plaster was starting to fall off the wall inside the sanctuary.
And the plaster has paint on it. I mean, it's
That's right. It had, fortunately, it was in an area with those just kind of checkered designs and what have you. So that it wasn't on one of the major murals or anything. And what we found out was that the moisture was not only leaking down through the roof of the church, but it was being wicked up through the foundations. So we knew he had big problems. And at that point, we hired the Morales Construction Company, whose family had been working on the church since the 1930s, several generations of Moraleses. And
when you say they were working on the church?
Well, they began to address all of these leaking problems and water problems, so that we did such things, for example, as put in a drainage system around the foundations. It turns out that the footings of the building were absorbing water because there was no drainage. So we put in French drains and that kind of thing to get the water away from the building. And worse yet, and this was the major and continues to be the major problem on the unfinished work, is that over the years, perfectly well-meaning people had covered that building in a stucco of cement. And if you have an old brick building or adobe, you don't want to cover it in cement. The reason being that it's waterproof.
Right.
However, it cracks, as you can tell from walking down any sidewalk. And so when it rains, the water gets in those cracks. And then when the sun comes out, the water remains stuck behind that waterproof coating and begins to migrate. So that it's eating away at the building almost like a cancer. And the cure for it was to strip off every inch of all of that exterior coating at the mission. And it was cement from head to foot by that time.
Wow.
And repair the bricks underneath that had rotted away, replace them with new bricks, repoint, you know, I mean, major masonry work. And the end result is that we had to, you know, restucco it, but it was restuccoed with the same formula, if you will, that the builders used in the 18th century, which is lime, sand, water, and cactus juice.
Cool. So, and were the bricks made of the same material that they made in the 18th century as well?
Well, pretty much. We got the bricks from Kerubabi in Sonora.
Okay.
And they were made to the same specifications. Bob Vint's been the architect overseeing the project, and they've done all this testing on the bricks, and they're about the same strength and whatnot, and they certainly look similar, and they're as close as possible to the original bricks. The original bricks, of course, were made on site.
Okay.
And we had no way to...
Just no one there to do that.
Well, no, and you'd have to make, you know, a kiln, and probably the EPA wouldn't let you do it.
Right. Dig,
well,
dig pits. And
so I hate to do this to you. We're running up against a hard break, the bottom of the hour news. When we come back, we want to finish the story about your organization. Okay. And folks, stick around, because we got a lot more with Bunny Fontana.
Well, I don't want to explain, I just want to unwind. I can't be any more than you already knew. But sit back, take off your coat, is what we're going to do.
Breaking news from CNN Radio. I'm Stan Case. At least two people are dead in the latest tornado outbreak to slam southern portions of the U.S. This time, it's Oklahoma taking a huge hit. Storms developed in western Oklahoma late in the afternoon, then moved rapidly into the Oklahoma City area. Canadian County Sheriff Randall Edwards says a number of people are hurt, and there's a lot of damage in and around El Reno, west of Oklahoma City.
I know that we've got multiple residential areas that have homes destroyed in them. I couldn't give you the extent as to how many.
The storm system has moved into eastern Oklahoma now. The death toll in Joplin, Missouri is creeping higher. Sunday's tornado is now blamed for at least 124 deaths. This is breaking news from CNN Radio.
For contractors looking to cut costs, the Home Depot is a great place to start, where right now, all special order Anderson windows and patio doors are 10% off. That's a nice price break on one of the most trusted names in windows, which means you can build with the best quality products and still lower your bids, which will help you win more business so you can grow a stronger one. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. Valid through May 29th, U.S. only.
Here's another question from the Geico Savings Mailbag.
David from St. Paul writes, my son's wondering if you'll come to his class so he can get extra credit on his biology test.
Extra credit?
Well, if there are any questions on that test about who can make it easy to save money by combining your RV and car insurance,
which is an unlikely question for a biology test,
then the answer is Geico.
True.
For all other questions about RV insurance, I like to guess answer G, E-I-C-O.
Call Geico or visit geico.com today to see how much our multi-policy discount could save you.
For contractors looking to cut costs, the Home Depot is a great place to start, where right now, all special order Anderson windows and patio doors are 10% off. That's a nice price break on one of the most trusted names in windows, which means you can build with the best quality products and still lower your bids, which will help you win more business so you can grow a stronger one. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. Valid through May 29th, U.S. only.
GoToMeeting by Citrix has won just about every award for web conferencing in the industry. But we think the best accolades come from our newest customers. Simple and smart. Dynamic. So happy we switched. GoToMeeting's smart, intuitive controls allow you to host your first meeting right away. Collaborate on files and documents in real time, plus hold as many meetings as you want from your Mac or PC. Try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and enter promo code 45.
Do you suffer from irrigation leaks, a broken sprinkler, leaky valves, or you just can't find the problem? At H&S Garden, we provide high-quality, reliable service at reasonable prices. Our repair technician has over 25 years of experience. And if you hate pulling weeds, raking mesquite beans, or trimming those thorny bushes, just leave the dirty work to us. We're licensed contractors with 30 years of experience in landscape management. Our crews are professional and take pride in their work. We'll meet you on site to establish a program that works for you. Call today at 293-6488 or visit us at hsgarden.com. H&S Garden, a family-owned and operated Tucson small business.
Charlie's Comic Books, Tucson's Mightiest, is at a new location, the southwest corner of Speedway and Craycroft. Open 7 days a week, Charlie's is a full-service comic shop. New comics, back issues, all your collecting supplies, action figures, t-shirts, and more. No subscription too small. Shipping available. Call 320-0279. That's 320-0279. Or click on charliescomics.com. Charlie's Comic Books, Tucson's Mightiest.
May I light that cigar for you, sir?
Thank you.
And welcome back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Bronstein. I'm here with my brother Jeff.
How you doing, everybody? I hope you're having a nice, safe drive home here in the old Pueblo.
And we're going to take a quick break away from the discussion with Dr. Fontana and talk to Big Mike about the cigar of the week. How you doing, Big Mike?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hello, Mike.
Hey.
What do you got for us, buddy?
Hey, with Memorial Day weekend coming up, I got a little something different. I put a flavored cigar up by the Heavenly Cigar Company.
Oh.
And yeah, they've got all kinds of flavors, and I'm figuring weather warming up, people might be barbecuing. If anyone is intimidated by a cigar, this is a nice place to start. It's a very mild smoke. It's got an Indonesian wrapper. It's made in Nicaragua. Very, very mild. They infuse the tobacco with several different flavors, and it'd be a good starter cigar for people who are intimidated. And we got regular customers who love flavored cigars. They smoke it all the time.
And those cigars are a little bit smaller as well.
Yeah, I've got them in two sizes. It's called a little Petite Corona. It's only about, I'd say, 4 inches long, and it's probably just a little bit wider than a cigarette.
That's what about a 20-minute smoke?
Yeah, 15, 20 minutes.
There you go.
And the flavors are just awesome. We got cherry, vanilla, strawberry, chocolate.
Yikes.
Rum. Yeah, rum, cognac, mojito, mango.
Wow.
All kinds of flavors.
Now Mike, are the Heavenly Cigar Girls going to be there passing out these sticks?
You know, I wish, but they're, you know, I called them, but they're busy.
But you and Jacob will be, right?
Oh, we'll always be. We can be your Heavenly Cigar Boys.
Guys.
Yes.
So if people want to come down and pick up these wonderful smokes, where are they at?
They can find us at 5350 East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 124, or call us at 747-4807. And as usual, it's buy three, get one free.
Perfect.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank
Mike,
you, gentlemen.
Have a great week, buddy.
Have a good holiday, guys.
This is Lamont Hundley from Arizona Health with your Fred and Jeff Show fitness tips. When it comes to your personal exercise routine, balance should be the most important ingredient. It's easy to lose track of time during a workout. Often we end up doing more strength training, then your cardio gets shortened and there's no time to stretch. Balance is always the key to fitness success. You need an accurate portion of cardiovascular and respiratory improvement exercises, strength training, and always stretch before or after the workout. Just as a balanced diet is important in your nutrition, a balanced workout would help you achieve greater results. For more information, please contact Arizona Health at arizonahealth.com. This has been Lamont Huntley with your Fred and Jeff fitness tips.
What's a monkey burger?
A simple, well-made burger cooked to your choice.
Why monkey burger?
We called it that because come see our art on the walls. It tells a story. Monkey burger, where it's impossible to be a food snob, even if they do serve wine, beer, as well as Tucson's best burger. 514-9797.
Just drive right past Olive Garden on Broadway in Craycroft and park in front of Monkey Burger.
Thank you for calling Huge Conglomerate Insurance. Your call is somewhat important to us. Please hold, and we'll be with you as soon as we can.
When you get sick or injured, the first call you make is to your neighborhood doctor. Shouldn't the next call you make be to your local insurance representative? Skip the hours waiting on hold to ask a simple question about what your insurance policy will cover.
Your current wait time is 45 minutes.
Instead, call Ronstadt Insurance at 721-4848 and get the attention that you deserve. Trust local, trust Ronstadt Insurance. Pioneers in good service.
It the old Najewid guy Kunyapsi has slid. What time did Chanugidan?
And welcome back to the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my brother Jeff, and we're just listening to the Santa Cruz River Band talking about our beautiful Tucson in the language of the Odom.
Pretty cool. Very cool. So before we took the hard break at the bottom of the hour, you were talking about restoration.
And we're here with Dr. Bunny.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Can we call you Bunny?
Please do. Everybody does.
All right. So, Bunny, you were talking about your organization and how you guys set up a different, separate from the church.
That's right.
Secular organization to raise money to help the restoration of San Javier del Bac.
That's right.
And you've done amazing things out there.
Well, yeah, we've been able to do them because of community support. It's incredible how people have in this community have rallied to the cause, and thank goodness, because we couldn't have done it absolutely otherwise. And and when we discovered the water damage that was taking place, the local radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, all got behind the whole thing, and so the money began to come in. It at least made it possible to pay the bills every 2 weeks. And from 1987 when this happened. I may have said 83, but 87. And we knew that the work needed to be done on the interior, because if you had been in that place before the present restoration, you would have thought you'd walked into an inkwell. Everything in there was black. It was
grimy,
dirty.
Yeah.
It was covered with wasps' nests. It was covered with birds' droppings.
Well, but we had talked about that earlier because later in the show we're going to get to A Gift of Angels, the book that you put together on the mission. And I remember as a little kid going into San Javier and everything was dark.
That's right.
Why was that? Was it the water damage?
Or? No. Most of it had to do with somebody's, again, well-meaning but ill-advised effort to preserve the paintings, and they varnished over a lot of those things, and that stuff blackened through time. And on the main altarpiece, it had been covered with silver leaf, and eventually that silver leaf begins to tarnish. You know, you get out your silver cleaner and clean it. Well, nobody had done that in more than 100 years.
Wow.
So the things were really black in there. But anyway, we realized that in order to do the inside was going to cost a ton of money, and we figured there was no point in doing it until we fixed the outside first, because we're going to continue to have water leakage and damage and so on. So we had to wait until 1992. And finally, in 1992, we brought to the mission one of the best teams of conservators in the world. I mean, these were people who had worked in the Vatican, some of whom, after this project was finished, went to Assisi when they had the earthquake, and all those Giotto murals fell, and, right. and they were the same people, you know, who were doing that kind of work. And from 1992 to 1997, they came back six different times and spent, you know, a few months each time bringing about the conservation of that interior. And it just, you know, completely transformed the whole place.
It's amazing.
And then since then, the work has continued on the exterior, so that the West Bell Tower, for example, had scaffolding around it for too many years. But anyone going out there and looking at it today will be blown away by how incredibly beautiful that is, especially when they compare it to the East Bell Tower, which is still waiting to get the work that it needs to bring it back. It's in terrible shape. It's you know, all of that cement plaster is in bad condition, and it's black from fungus, from water. I mean, it's a mess. So that right now the big effort on the part of the Patronato San Javier is to raise the money that's needed to get that East Bell Tower taken care of. And people say, well, you know, how much will it cost and how long will it take? It's like doing cancer surgery. You don't know until you go in,
right,
to know what you're going to find underneath, because underneath that cement stucco could be anything. Could be, you know, relatively easy, or it could take a very long time. But no matter what, it's going to take considerable money. And so that the Patronato right now is you know, looking to the community once more for funds to finish the job, because that's the last really major thing that needs to be done out there, is to take care of that East Bell Tower.
And how much are we talking? What do you guys estimate that the bill's going to be?
Well, you know, once again,
you're not too sure.
A minimum of $1 million.
Okay.
And you know, and we have money toward that. It's not as if we're not sitting on our hands. But in the meantime, we've had to keep our expert crew working out there, so they're working on the arcade and the patio, on a skeleton crew, on a reduced workday basis. They're only out there 4 days a week, and so it's really a skeleton crew, but we don't want to lose them.
Right.
So that, you know, we're continually trying to raise money, and anyone interested needs to get in touch with the Patronato San Javier. We have a website.
And we'll put that website on our
we'll put
our
your
website.
Link. Yeah, we'll put the address on our website.
Oh, that's great.
And folks just go to fredandjeff.com and they can click the link to your website.
Okay, or they can Google Patronato San Javier and they will bring it up. And you know,
all right, Bunny, how do you spell Patronato?
Patronato.
There you go. So the work that you've done, and I want to skip back to what you'd said earlier about the paintings on the interior of the church and how they were 20, 30 years ago.
Well, they were that way until 1992.
Okay, so 13 years ago, 12 years ago.
Right.
I mean, and how it is today. You wrote a book called A Gift of Angels, The Art of Mission San Javier del Bach. This came out earlier this year. And it is absolutely amazing. Amazing.
Right.
It's a 9-pound coffee book that
coffee table
book, but you said earlier that four people could sit on it.
Well, no, actually, Fitzsimmons in his satirical column on Saturday morning said, it's as big as a coffee table, but it's okay because it comes with a complimentary forklift, and it will seat 8 people.
And your friend said
if you open it, it will seat 12.
It's absolutely amazing. I mean, it's an amazing book, and people can find it on Amazon. I mean, you go to Amazon.com and you just look for a gift of angels.
We'll have a link to that as well.
Yeah, but let's talk about what we want to talk about is of all of the art that was in San Javier del Mar. Mm-hmm. What was the one thing, the major thing, that when you stripped the varnish, you stripped all of the dark off of it, the soot, everything, the potentially 100, 200 years of garbage off
That's
of
right,
it,
exactly.
was something that you totally didn't think it was?
Well, more than one thing. One of the funnier ones, and this was fairly on in there, in the years that they were working there. There's a huge painting underneath the main dome, of a painting that had always been identified as Christ as the Good Shepherd. There's the biblical passage, a Good Shepherd, the whole Good Shepherd story,
tending his flock, etc.
Yeah, yeah. And there was no reason to doubt it. There was this figure up there, and he was sitting there with all the sheep around him. But when it was cleaned, El Buen Pastor, or the Good Shepherd, turned out to be La Divina Pastora, and it was the Virgin Mary as the Good Shepherdess.
Wow.
And so we added another Marian image to this long list of, it's very much a Marian church. Mary is represented far more than any other religious personage in the church. So that was one. And the other one that's really delightful is that by far the most damaged painting that was salvageable, it was just black. It was a mess. And you could tell that there was something under there, but you didn't know what. And one of the Italian conservators worked on the thing most of the time he was here during one of the sessions. And it turns out to be a picture of the Virgin Mary and the Christ child, and she's diapering the Christ child. She's putting a diaper on him.
Wow.
And it's based on a 17th century painting by a Spanish artist named Murillo, and he labeled it La Virgen de la Faja, which literally translated means the Virgin of the Girdle. But it's really the Virgin of the diaper. But when
it's nicer to say the girdle.
Well, yeah. When I did the book, I couldn't bring myself to use the word diaper, so I don't remember what I called it in the catalog. And
you bring up another good point. There are so many influences for the art that are inside this church.
Oh yeah.
I mean, can you give us an idea of the scope?
Sure. There are 64 saints represented in the art in the
64.
Church. 64 saints, yeah. And you could have, for every month of the year, there would be at least one or more saints' days involved. In other words, you could celebrate the saints' day for that particular saint and then point to a picture or a sculpture and say, okay, there he is, which is the purpose of the painting in the first place. I mean, it was, the Adam were non-literate. They didn't have a written language. So all of this imagery was used as a teaching aid. And you could talk about the Last Supper or the Pentecost or the Adoration of the Shepherds. You didn't have to imagine it. You could point to a picture, this is it. This is what it looks like. So that all of that, the purpose of that art was as an aid to teaching.
Now, do we have any idea who was responsible for the art?
No, we don't.
Okay. So
that's the great mystery. And we don't know how many, the paintings in there, probably more than one artist, possibly even at some somewhat different times. Some of the statues were done by the sculptor, and we don't know who he was, in situ. In other words, the God the Father, for instance, he's permanently there. It's not a portable statue. On the other hand, it's full of portable statues that were made in guild workshops in Mexico, packed in straw, put on mules or horses or burros or whatever, and actually transported all the way probably from Querétaro, which is about 120 miles north of Mexico City, and brought up to the mission. And then after they arrived, the sculptor at the mission vested them with plaster clothing. You know, in other words, the wooden heads, hands, and feet, and the wooden armature were shipped up here. And then after they got here, why, he went ahead and sculptured the, you know, their vestments, their clothing that's on them.
Is that because it was just too fine of work to survive the travels?
That would never make it. That plaster would break. I mean, and those are, you know, those particular statues are pretty heavy. One of them, when we were working on the restoration, we weren't altogether positive what they looked like under all that plaster. So there's a statue of St. Ignatius of Loyola, who was the founder of the Jesuits, or the Society of Jesus. And one of the conservators and I hauled him down to the University Medical Center because we wanted to get an X-ray to see what was underneath that plaster, you know, what it looked like. And we had him on a little flat cart, all kind of wrapped up, but there he was.
Right.
And we're walking down the hall of the University Medical Center, and some guy walks by, looks down at him, and he said, "I think he's dead already." So, but he was X-rayed and CAT scanned.
Wow.
And it showed absolutely how he was made and put together, so you could see everything that was underneath all that plaster.
That's great.
Now, you know, the mission has been there for several hundred years. And
well, not, you know, let, just a little well, more well, than 200.
Well, actually, it's, well, that's several.
Fred.
Well, yeah, my math is really good. But, you know, a lot of people look at Centevere the way it is today, and mm-hmm. you know, the association with Father Kino,
right?
And there's the assumption that that's the mission that Father Kino built,
right? Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Father Kino founded the mission in 1692, but founding the mission and building a church are two radically different things. So that founding the mission simply means that he began the mission, which means to say the task of bringing about the evangelization of the native population. So that, you know, that's was the meaning of mission. Mission had nothing to do with a building, with a physical structure. It had to do with an activity, something you're doing. So that in that sense, he founded the mission. And the confusion is that in 1700, he laid the foundations for a church. And he described it in his diaries, very, you know, detailed. He said he could bring water from the river to it, and it was a large church and so on. Never got beyond the foundations. He was only there less than a week. He went away, got busy doing other things, and the record is crystal clear that that church was never built, because when the Jesuits came along, he died in 1711.
Padre Kino did.
Yes, and in 1732, when the next priest came to San Javier, there was no church there. There was nothing there. And the first church wasn't built until 1756, when one of his successors built a church, an adobe building that was built in the shape of a shoebox, which is still there in disguise. And it's because this original building was parallel to the present building. But when they finished the present building sometime early in the 19th century, wanting to salvage the roofing beams and the adobes and use them, they dismantled the first church, took it around the corner, and butted it up against the east bell tower. So when you stand there and look at the church, and if you look at that wing that comes off to the east or to the right as you face the building, that's the first church. In disguise, in a different location,
and moved,
not used again as a church. They divided it into rooms, and you know, they used it for other things, living quarters or whatever it may be.
Oh, that's crazy! So real quick, we got about 5 minutes left. Mm-hmm. We have some flowers to give away from Mayfield Florist, and for the first person that calls us up at 529-3508 and tells us how many saints are represented in the church, San Javier del Bac, first person, 529-3508, tell us the number of saints, gets the dozen roses from Mayfield's Florist. All right, Bunny.
Right.
What else? Yeah, you're right. That's the right number, Christopher. So tell us more about what you guys discovered as you were fixing up the interior of the church.
Oh, my goodness.
Fred wants you to tell the story of the graffiti.
Well, you know, Lorraine Drachman, who's you know, been very active with the Patronatos.
Oh, absolutely. Lorraine was our first really more or less permanent fundraiser.
Right. She came to me one day at a meeting, and she was ribbing me. Mm-hmm. And she said, I've got to take you out and show you something. And we still haven't scheduled it, but she told me what it was, that her grandfather and our great grandfather.
Yeah, well, this would have been her by marriage.
By marriage, right.
Right.
Yeah, so the Drachmans and the Ronstadts were not all that respectful to the mission back in the day.
Yeah, but this is over 100 years ago. How long ago was this? When were they in there scratching their names in the, you know, where are they?
Well, they were in the baptistry, and there were some actually on the exterior of the building up there in that west bell tower.
Yeah, that's the bell towers
that's finished. Yeah, they, but you know, that no shame, because that was what people did. They used to, in the old days, they'd get in a horse and a buggy, and they'd go out and have a picnic at San Javier, and it was a day long adventure. And people would go out and have a good time, and they'd get permission from somebody and get inside the church. And when nobody was looking, why they'd either use a pencil or a sharp knife or something and scratch it or draw it on the walls.
Oh, and, that's funny. And you've probably seen a lot of names out there that are...
Yeah, we have a record of them, actually, because before they were... a lot of them are still there. You can't see them any longer, because when the conservators were there, they used watercolors to sort of... you know, conceal them, but they're still underneath. And of course, those that are incised are, you know, you'll never get rid of those. But there are all kinds of well-known Tucson old families whose names are.
So it's not just us.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, and the Steinfelds are there, and I forget the big company that Steinfeld started out with, and they were in partners and. Town, and that same family ultimately went to New York and were responsible for the Empire State Building.
Well, that's a story for another show. I don't think I know that story. So, yeah, that's a great story. So folks, the name of the book is A Gift of Angels, The Art of Mission, San Javier del Bac. Please look for it. Please get it. It is absolutely... You want to talk about a gift.
Amazing. And not only does it have just absolutely beautiful photographs.
Taken by Edward McCain.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about Edward real quick. We got a minute or two to go. Who is Edward McCain?
Yeah. Edward McCain is one of the best photographers in Tucson, in my estimation. And he worked like, you know, he was out there at nights. And he had the advantage that we were able to get grant money so that he could get up in places with the scaffolding. He had tremendous lights. So that the truth of the matter is that you can see the art in this of the mission in this book far better than you can if you go out there and look.
Yeah,
there's some stuff that you will never see. I mean,
that's right.
As somebody just walking in the door, there are pictures in here of the mission, of the art that mm-hmm. you will never have access to. And not only are there gorgeous pictures, but there's also the text, the history,
what
the
you wrote, yeah, detailing the saints, yeah, the lions beautiful. On the altars. I mean, it's amazing.
I'll tell you a funny story. As soon as this book came out, I took a copy over to the mission and I showed it to Father Steve, who is the pastor there. And he's been there a long time, and he kept turning pages and looking at the pictures, and he'd say, "Where's this? Where's that?"
Oh, I hope he doesn't listen.
Oh, he knows.
Dr. Fontana, you are one of the reasons living in Southern Arizona is a wonderful place to live, and we appreciate everything you've done. Your work here is just fantastic. It helps that icon that we've all known and grown up with.
I love the Ronstadts, as you know, and your grandparents were some of the dearest people I've ever known.
Thank you very much. Well, folks, thanks for listening to the Fred and Jeff Show. Check out the electronic companion, fredjeff.com. The show will be up probably tomorrow. And we will see you next week, Tucson. Have a great week.
KJLL, South Tucson. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. At least six.